What's going on, everybody? My name is Gabriel Wilkins, and welcome inside to the first ever episode of the New 24 Podcast, a weekly show where I'll be looking forward to discussing some of the marquee news and storylines that have taken shape across the NBA in recent days and more, alongside of my good friend, the man of many hustles and co-host of the show, Torrence Staggart, who I'm more than honored to be linking up with to bring back a program that, if you had the pleasure of being familiar with my work in the past, you may have come across it during my time at Radio DePaul Sports several years ago. What's going on, Torrence?
What's going on? How everybody doing? Even if you're out there, you enjoy the game, love the game, we here for you.
Oh, for sure. We're definitely trying to bring real basketball conversations back into the forefront, no doubt about that one. So let's open up this week's show discussing the hot start of a franchise that, after getting knocked out in the Eastern Conference semis last season, seems determined to ensure that they progress further this time around, and that's the Cleveland Cavaliers. Through the first 12 games of the 24-25 NBA season, the Cavs are off to their best start in franchise history and stand as the lone unbeaten team in the association as we speak this season under head coach Kenny Atkinson, who in his first season under the helm at Cleveland has rallied his troops together to play a selfless brand of ball led behind their all-star backcourt duo in Donovan Mitchell and reigning Eastern Conference Player of the Week, Darius Garland, six-year guard out of Vanderbilt, who, as of this recording, is the only player in the NBA right now averaging 20 points per game and shooting at least 50% from the field, 40% from three-point land, and 90% from the charity stripe thus far on the young campaign. Cleveland, who ranked 20th in points per game a season ago under J.B. Bickerstaff, currently leads the league in offensive efficiency, scoring 122 points per 100 possessions per game, field goal percentage, and three-point field goal percentage, in addition to also residing among the top 10 in defensive efficiency entering week four of the NBA season with the help of all-star big man Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, who is coming to his own after being in the league for the last 4 years. So, Torrence, you know, the last time that we hosted an episode of the New 24, or the last time an episode of the New 24 was recorded at Radio DePaul Sports back in 2018, the Cleveland Cavaliers were in the NBA Finals. Obviously, this is a different group and cast compared to the one we witnessed in LeBron James' second tenure in the land and featured the likes of a Tyronn Lue under the helm, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, and those guys. But, however, Kenny Atkinson has the Cavs looking like the association's model franchise in the early days of the regular season after serving as an assistant on Steve Kerr's staff the last 3 years at Golden State. What do you personally think has led to Cleveland's sudden turnaround, and how far do you think this Cavaliers team can go this year after becoming just the 18th team in the history of the league to open up the season with 12 straight wins?
Oh, man, I think most importantly, this Cavs team, they had a great offseason because just as much of an impact Kenny Atkinson has had coaching, which I'll get to in a second, I think that Donovan Mitchell signing his deal early, getting that out the way, it kind of really just like settled a lot of things in the organization because there was rumors that he wanted to get traded. He never wanted to be in Cleveland in the first place. Then it was the other rumor of Darius Garland that if Donovan Mitchell was to return to the Cavs, that Darius Garland was seeking to get traded out of Cleveland. So I believe I just heard on the broadcast 2 games ago with the Cavs, they were saying that Kenny Atkinson flew to each player during the offseason right after the Olympics, building a relationship, letting the guys know about their roles. And it's playing out on the court. I mean, one of the big issues they had last season was Garland and Mitchell couldn't be successful together on the court at the same time. This year, they're both having great, great seasons, along with fixing the front court with Jared Allen and Evan Mobley being able to play a lot more minutes together. But at the same time, he's staggering the minutes in a way that all four guys have been able to be successful and have their time, you know, as a primary option outside of Jared Allen.
You know, it's funny you bring up the staggering of minutes because that's something that has come into the forefront over the last couple of games that Cleveland has played. And I actually wanted to bring that up because The other night when Cleveland was in Chicago, it was late in the third quarter. They were down by 9. And Kenny made a move that was real kind of startling to me, where he took Evan Mobley out and he put Dean Wade in at the five. And I believe they had Sam Merrill out there with Ty Jerome and LeVert. Like, it was their whole bench unit. It wasn't a starter on the floor. And that's what turned the game around. And after the game, Kenny was saying to the press, like, I noticed something wasn't right with my stars. Like, guys just came out flat. We looked despondent. We looked tired. But I knew that that was something I had to do in order to see if we could turn this game around and flip it in our favor. And it did. And he made a move the game before against Brooklyn, where he saw Jared Allen was struggling a little bit. And he was like, okay, I'm going to take him out and I'm going to sub Mobley in. And once Mobley was in for like the last 6 minutes of the fourth quarter, everything changed. You see Mobley get a game-winning block, you know, make some key plays down the stretch to help them preserve their streak and remain unbeaten on the year. And, you know, we've been talking privately about the value of coaching. And I think that's what's really led to the sudden turnaround in Cleveland, is what Kenny Atkinson has been doing. He's pressing all the right buttons, and he has those guys believing in one another and playing together. You know, last year when I saw Cleveland play, I didn't see guys getting amped up to see guys off the bench shining. I saw that last night when Ty Jerome stepped up big, who has been a great guard off the bench for them after missing most of the season last year with an ankle injury. He stepped up and been that quasi-like point guard for the second unit, making plays, hitting shots. I don't know how sustainable their shooting will be throughout the course of the year, but the one thing that's led to the turnaround is guys just playing together. They're playing a selfless brand of basketball. They're moving the ball around. You saw the last 2 years, I would say, of the Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland experiment. They were very pick and roll heavy. Now they've spread the floor out. Guys are moving the ball around. I see Donovan Mitchell taking less shots, being more of a willing passer, even though he's always had that ability. I see him now not caring about getting 28 or 30 a game. He does it when he has to. And, you know, their most recent game in Chicago was one of those games where early on he got off and he went off of like 25. And I believe he finished with maybe 32 to 34 on the night. But that's been the biggest difference between where they have been the last 2 years versus where they are now. And I think if they keep playing this brand of basketball with the way that the East is looking right now, they could be a team potentially that knocks on the door of the Eastern Conference Finals if they keep this level of play up and guys stay healthy.
Yeah, they can definitely get to the conference finals. I mean, it's still very early in the season, but yeah, I think right now a more likely goal, they could shoot for the number one seed. I mean, since that they do have they're out to such a great start, and yeah, having home court would definitely help a team like this out. But one of the best parts, though, not to forget, is that Max Strus, he's still. They're still waiting on his return as well.
Right.
So now that got an even more like added punch as far as shooting goes, because you was speaking about how are they going to be able to sustain that. I mean, you bringing in another shooter, I mean, that's almost the equivalent of a deadline move at this point because they've gotten out to such a great start.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we can't forget about Max Strus and what he brings to that ball club and him being a key contributor last year. I'm pretty sure once he gets back healthy, he's definitely going to be thrown into the ring on the court, rather. You know, going forward, but I've just been very impressed with what I've seen. And Darius Garland right now is looking like a guy that I don't think he may be the MVP of the league, but he may get some MVP votes because what he's doing, keeping his dribble alive, you know, snaking into the paint, finding shooters, being patient, you know, his conditioning seems to be well improved and much better compared to years of past. I really like what I'm seeing from him. And you see him coming up big in key moments of games alongside of Donovan Mitchell. Those guys just look like they're on one accord right now, man. And I give a ton of credit to Kenny Atkinson for what he's been able to do. And it seems like he's brought some of the principles that he took from Golden State over there, and it's turned their whole franchise around thus far.
Yeah, being able to play like the two dynamic players in a backcourt together, I could definitely see the correlation with that. But I mean, he made his name in Brooklyn making the most out of a little. You know, those teams that had D'Angelo Russell and Jared Dudley and those guys over there. So you giving him two all-star quality talents in Garland and Mitchell, I mean, I would only expect great things. Not a perfect start like they've had so far, but I for sure probably a top four seed. But at this point, like they're looking at a one seed. And they might have four all-stars too.
Yeah, definitely. And you bring up the Brooklyn factor. You know, you got two guys that were a part of that roster in Brooklyn with Atkinson that are on this ball club, and Caris LeVert and Jared Allen. So with him having history with those guys, I think that that's helped as well. And you know, you were talking about it with me privately about how Jeff Teague saying on Club 520 how he it was no doubt in his mind that when Kenny Atkinson took this job that he was going to be the guy to turn things around. Because he, like I say, he has these guys playing together, and I don't think that getting a top seed is out the realm of possibility with the hot start they've gotten out to. You know, the only thing that could really get in the way, I feel, is the injuries. Like I'm looking at their schedule right now, they have the Sixers on the dock. They have Charlotte coming up on Sunday, the Bulls coming up again on Friday, and then you. Next week you got the Celtics. That might be the game that everybody really wants to see. That's the true measuring stick game, and that could be a game that if the streak hasn't been broken yet, could be the one that leads to it. But man, they got a pretty decent like schedule that they can take advantage of and keep this thing going.
Yeah, and the East is off to an interesting start, I'd say the least. Even Boston to a certain extent. I mean, Porzingis is out, and Boston, they haven't rounded into form yet. You know, guys played in the Olympics, long postseason. So possibly, like, after the All-Star break, we might see Boston go on their double-digit win streak, because I'm pretty sure that's going to happen.
Oh, for sure. I even though Boston, you know, has dealt with some injuries to Kristaps Porzingis and Jaylen Brown, I think for the most part they're off to a decent start. Like they're only a couple of games back of the pace that Cleveland has set. So, you know, all it takes is one bad week, you right up at the top again. But because outside of those two teams right now in the East, it's pretty much been a free for all. You know, a lot of teams that's hovering around 500 or worse right now that's just trying to, you know, stay above water and stay within the thick of the race as it gets to the, you know, middle portion of the season in the coming months. But I want to depart away from the great start in the land to talk about the organization that resides in the desert portion of the West, known as the Phoenix Suns, who, in spite of recently losing one of the game's premier scorers to a calf strain injury over the next couple of weeks, have put themselves in a good position within the standings through the first 10 games of the year. After managing to get swept in the opening round of the playoffs at the hands of the Minnesota Timberwolves this past spring, despite 8 of their first 10 games of the season being within 5 points in the last 5 minutes of regulation, the Suns have emerged as one of the game's premier teams in the clutch, led by 14-time All-Star forward Kevin Durant, who recently guided Phoenix on a 7-game win streak en route to hitting huge shots late in victories against the Miami Heat and Philadelphia 76ers last week, in addition to a majestic pull-up jumper over the outstretched arms of Daniel Gafford to help the Suns knock off the defending Western Conference champs in the Dallas Mavericks in front of a national audience on ESPN last Friday night. Now the Suns will try to begin a new winning streak as the team that stands unbeaten in the clutch games with the easy money sniper in uniform this season saw their early season winning streak come to an end in their first game without Durant at the hands of the Sacramento Kings to close out last weekend after failing to get defensive stops late. Torrence, although we know that Bradley Beal and Devin Booker are still in the mix out there in Phoenix, the loss of Kevin Durant, albeit for what appears to be a short time, could have the possibility to impact the Suns in a way that could be tough to overcome during an early season stretch where we have seen a plethora of stars go down for an extended period of time across the NBA, making not only the play of Beal and Booker more vital, but their health as well after losing their most versatile wing on both sides of the ball. Suns are currently in a three-way tie with OKC at Golden State for the best record in the West entering the week. Do you still expect Phoenix to remain within the top three of the standings by the time that Durant is cleared to return to action in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, because I believe Devin Booker's been ready to, he's already taken that like step. I mean, he led the Suns to a finals appearance in 2021. He was one of the better players on the Olympic team this summer. And during that postseason run, the last couple of years, especially the series against Denver 2 years ago, I mean, dude was out there having 40 and 50 point games. So carrying a regular season team for a couple of weeks, I think he can do it. And they have a better coach on Bud this season. They have a point guard in Tyus Jones to relieve Book of a lot of the ball handling duties he's had to do the last few years. So, man, he's getting him and Bradley Beal are going to get KD shots, and hopefully Yusuf Nurkic, who I think is going to be important during his next few weeks. Hopefully, you know, he remains a double-double machine and takes advantages of the matchups because he's getting one-on-one coverage in the post. So he's getting more shots. So hopefully he takes advantage of that for them.
I don't worry about the Suns too much. I mean, last year, I think the biggest difference was with them last year compared to this year is they didn't know how to finish games alongside of one another, being a big three in clutch situations because they were one of the worst teams in clutch minutes record-wise. And I think that's why they suffered and they ended up getting the seed that they did, which I believe was the sixth seed and barely, you know, missing the play-in round. So with that said, I expect them to weather the storm a little bit. It's only going to be for a couple of weeks. And like you said, Devin Booker is one of the best two guards in the league. And he's a guy that's proven to be a selfless player that can play off the ball or on the ball when you need him to. And with Tyus Jones there, I think being such a huge X factor in that point guard that they were missing a season ago, it's going to help them. And I also like the activity that I've seen from the rookie forward out of UVA, and that's Ryan Dunn. You know, defensively, I think he's been a godsend for them. And all they really need him to do is just continue to play his role on the defensive end and knock down, you know, catch and shoot trays that will be created by the likes of a Tyus Jones alongside of a Devin Booker. I also expect for Grayson Allen, you know, to step up as well and provide them with some quality minutes. And Royce O'Neal, too, I think he'll be called on to, you know, pick up some of the slack that KD was doing an excellent job of it to begin the season. So I'm not too worried about them. I just want to see how guys respond early on and find a rhythm. You know, Bradley Beal looks like he's a little bit more comfortable in the games that I've seen, which is a positive sign because they're going to have to keep it up with a top-heavy roster. And I don't think they can afford too many other injuries, especially in the wake of the KD injury.
Nah, they can't. But like I said, I think they'll be fine this season. Like you said, it's a comfort thing. Guys look a lot more comfortable than they have since KD's arrival in Phoenix.
Yeah, so I mean, which brings to my next question, you know, like outside of the two main guys outside of Durant and Beal and Booker, which member of the Suns supporting cast do you believe must find a way to elevate their play in an effort to help Phoenix stay above water? You know, you bring up Nurkic, how he's been putting up double-double numbers. Like, is there anybody else that you could see?
Man, honestly, really, it comes down to this. I think Nurkic and Tyus Jones, the other two guys in the starting lineup. I mean, Tyus Jones has already benefited them in a lot of ways, just his presence on the court. And Nurkic, I mean, you're in the West with Nikola Jokic, Naz Reid, Julius Randle, Anthony Davis. You just keep going, Domantas Sabonis. That five position, I mean, you got to go out there and win those matchups. And I mean, guys kind of push Nurkic around a little bit. He doesn't have like the best reputation of being like dominant, you know, down there. And like I said, you're getting one-on-one coverage at all times down there. So this is going to be important, not just for the Durant portion of the season where he's out with an injury, but they're going to need him throughout the season and into the playoffs as well. Because he's not the athletic guy like a Daniel Gafford or Derek Lively either. So he's kind of like an old school center in a way, but they still need the production from that spot. I mean, as KD famously told Kendrick Perkins, man, you averaged 2 points a game for us when you was here in OKC. So I mean, we don't really want to hear those same statements about a potential title team this season.
No, absolutely not. And I agree. You know, Nurkic has his hands full, but he's a guy that, you know, despite his inability to, you know, match up well with the athletic bigs in the league, like you say, he's been able to hold his own for the most part. And that's what they're going to need him to continue to do. I'm looking at the Suns' schedule this upcoming week. They got four games on the road. You know, you got Utah. That'll be the opener for the NBA Cup. You got
W.
Sacramento. You got OKC and Minnesota. So this is a big week. This is a big week. This is definitely one of those weeks that you don't want to go 1-3. You know, you would take 2-2, but if you could go 3-1, that would be a big positive and a boost that you could carry going into future weeks flying ahead.
Yeah, man, and that's the most disappointing part of this injury. It was just like I was really looking forward to seeing KD in the NBA Cup setting this season. Because he was one of the guys that after the first game or two, he kind of came around on the idea of it. So I was real curious to see how he would come out this season from the beginning.
Real quick, you know, since we're talking about injuries, and this NBA season has been a season that's been filled with plenty of injuries to some of the game's top stars. Zion Williamson right now is out due to injury. Ja Morant right now is out due to injury. We just talked about Kevin Durant. We just seen news that Damian Lillard is going to be out due to a concussion, I believe, in Toronto. Giannis Antetokounmpo has missed time. Like, I saw a stat today where some of the game's top stars are on pace to miss over 1,000 games this season. Like, Kawhi Leonard's out of action right now. You know, we've yet to see Joel Embiid play as of this recording, who will be set to return on Tuesday evening, if I'm not mistaken, against the New York Knicks in front of a national audience at TNT. What's your thoughts on all these injuries, man? And as a fan, does it make it hard to follow the league when you see so many of these injuries happening to the game's marquee stars?
Well, man, we've been going through and having this conversation about injuries since at least 2014, 15. I don't really see the injury thing changing. Like, the NBA is very fast paced now. It's regular season, it's up and down. And then, even in a half court setting, people starting their like they sets way out near the half court line because guys are shooting threes from so deep out. So now when you got guys switching and recovering, I mean, guys are just running around the court like a lot more chance for injury. So it's bound to come with the game. I'll say for anybody listening to this pod, like we really true basketball, well, NBA lovers, I'll say. So regardless of any stars playing or not, I'm gonna look for the best game each night and check it out. You know, there's always an opportunity for another guy to step up. There's always a guy we've heard about from college or high school. Like all of these guys were highly ranked and highly touted at some point. So if you love basketball, I mean, there's always something to watch and support. Now, if these guys are missing games in the postseason, yeah, that hurts. Guys are going to be missing games in this NBA Cup this season, and that's going to hurt because they're trying to build the reputation of that award. And I mean, if you feel like guys, like teams aren't really going through anybody because stars are out, yeah, it's gonna hurt that the legitimacy a little bit. But overall, for the regular season, I think the NBA will manage. They've been doing it for, honestly, we've been talking about these injuries for nearly a decade now.
Yeah, we have, but it's been so many variations of it. You know, you have the low management argument. We've talked about that off and on the record. You have, you know, guys that are being told to sit out, even when they don't want to sit out. And in this situation, this season, you're seeing a lot of guys who, like you take Paolo Banchero, for instance, you know, had a great start to the year, was really taking that leap in his third season out of Duke that everybody wanted to see, drops 50. You know, at the on the hands of the Indiana Pacers, and then comes into Chicago, has a big time game, albeit in a loss. And then next thing you know, he has a issue with his oblique, and he's gonna be out, you know, for over the next month. And that's a tough blow. You know, don't get me wrong, I'm still gonna watch games, as you know, and I know you will. And it has been some stories that have come out where you have seen guys like a Norman Powell or the LA Clippers, you know, rise into his own following that injury of Kawhi Leonard and is really making a name for himself. And I believe is one of only two players that average over 20 plus points a game while shooting 50% from the floor. You know, him and Jokic, I believe, are the only two guys to do that. So that's been real cool to see. But moving on from, you know, the injury related business pertains to the NBA alongside of the Phoenix Suns on the West Coast to discuss the slow starts of two Eastern Conference franchises who, in spite of possessing star-studded duos, have not managed to find their rhythms in the early going of the season. After making a decision to go after and land Paul George in free agency, the Philadelphia 76ers have not managed to reap the dividends of their offseason selection to better nine-time All-Star wing beside former MVP center Joel Embiid, as the two stars have yet to see the floor together through the first few weeks of the season due to injuries and had to watch their team stumble out of the gate to a 2-7 start through the first nine games of the year in the city of brotherly love, in addition to also receiving the news that Tyrese Maxey will be sidelined for the next couple of weeks after suffering a hamstring injury last week during the Sixers road trip in LA, leaving a ton of fans on the East Coast wondering when they might be able to see all three on the court at the same time. While the Milwaukee Bucks are off to one of their worst starts since Giannis Antetokounmpo's rookie season, losing eight out of their first 10 games to open up the campaign, despite owning fourth quarter leads against the likes of the Boston Celtics and Cleveland Cavaliers in recent days, as the team led by head coach Doc Rivers finds themselves searching for answers as they enter a stretch where they will play seven out of their next eight games at home entering week four of the season. According to ESPN, Torrance, only three teams over the past 25 seasons have ever started the year 1-6 or worse and managed to make the playoffs. The 21-22 Pelicans, the 04-05 Bulls, and the 03-04 Heat. Doc Rivers recently said following a loss last week in Cleveland that he, in short, expects for the Bucks to make the playoffs and that he isn't worried about a slow start. Meanwhile, in Philadelphia, guys seem to know that they have significant ground to make up. It's just a matter of getting healthy and whether or not Joel Embiid will seek to make a case to Sixers management about playing in back-to-back games to help them do so in a top-heavy East right now, where outside of Cleveland and Boston, as we mentioned earlier, most teams are playing 500 or less basketball. Which team between both the Bucks and the Sixers are you concerned about the most going forward this year, and why?
The most concerned team definitely would be the Milwaukee Bucks. We're talking about one of the oldest rosters in the league. We're talking about the guy who's supposed to be the third option on the team, Chris Middleton. He's been battling injuries since the title in 2021. He's not there right now. And I believe he has surgery on both ankles this offseason.
He did.
Damn, Giannis, he missed the first round of the postseason last year. Giannis has been kind of injury prone the last few years, quiet as kept. Damian Lillard, he's been dealing with injuries since the Blazers made it to the Western Conference Finals. The Doc Rivers so happens to always blow a lead each year in the playoffs. Doc Rivers became the coach of the Bucks after Adrian Griffin was off to a great start, and Doc Rivers happened to be one of the consultants for the Milwaukee Bucks at the time as well. Doc Rivers added Darvin Ham to his coaching staff last year, who was probably one of the most panned coaches in the league last season. Now, that's the nature of having a job in LA. But some of those highlights with Darvin didn't look great, didn't look inspiring. And we're talking about an older team this season. And we got trade rumors with Giannis that Giannis started himself. Nobody else did. Giannis mentioned that the team might want to trade him if things don't go well this season, which makes me feel like Giannis went to training camp and felt like shit looked terrible. Dame doesn't seem enthused. Now, if I was told that I'm going to have to live in Milwaukee as opposed to Miami, yeah, it'll take me some time to get over that too. But it's looking like basketball reasons. On paper, Giannis and Dame should be a great fit. But when you look at the reality of their games and how it fits together, it's just a problem. Dame needs the ball, and it would be beneficial for him and Giannis to do a lot of pick and roll together. But Giannis, despite being a power forward center defensively, he's really been the point guard for the Bucks for the past 4 to 5 years. Giannis is used to bringing the ball down and making every decision down the court, a la LeBron, a la Luka Doncic. It's just more running back, attacking the rim style with him. He's not great at setting picks and rolling to the rim, catching it and finishing. He's not great in the pick and pop because he's not a great jump shooter. So now you got cap space being, I won't say wasted, but it's being used. You got dead cap money in Chris Middleton. You have, I didn't really ask to be here with Dame. And you got Giannis looking at the door. So I'm gonna go with the Bucks. I'll let you jump in, let me know what your answer is.
I agree with you. I agree with you. When I look at Philadelphia, Philadelphia has things that they can point at, even in some positives in the midst of their losing to start the year. We've seen Jared McCain come into his own, a rookie out of Duke with some big performances since, the injuries to Tyrese Maxey have taken him out of commission for the next couple of weeks. Kelly Oubre has played fairly well. Caleb Martin has stepped up. It's just been with them finding time to gel, in my opinion. Like Paul George, you can tell that he's still trying to find his win and get his conditioning in order. But I think in due time, once he does, and he figures his place out, he'll be fine. It's still some questions, of course. And I know that they may not be that top three or four team that we thought they would be in the preseason, but I do believe a good week of basketball could put them in the thick of things. With Milwaukee, the margin of error is so small. The defense is not what it used to be. The defense that we saw under Mike Budenholzer his first few years under the helm, those days are over. They look a step slower. Like you said, we're talking about one of the oldest teams in the league. And you're asking a lot out of Chris Middleton when he is able to return this season to really step up and be that number three option. I remember having conversations with you a couple of years ago where you would always ask me, is Chris Middleton the best two option in the league? You would state your case as to why you felt he was. Now, I don't know if we can say that. And they're going to need him more than ever to be one of the best number three options in the league. You're asking a 33-year-old that's been through numerous injuries with his knees and his ankles to step up to the plate and be that guy because they don't really have help coming from anywhere else. With such a top-heavy roster. And when you give up the draft capital that they gave up to get Damian Lillard in the mix, a guy who, like you said, was hell-bent on being in Miami, and now he comes to Milwaukee, a guy that I thought when he came into Milwaukee was honestly trying to be a willing, team player, a guy that was trying to sacrifice and find his foot next to Giannis. But it's hard, like you say, when you're a ball-dominant guard, playing with a ball dominant forward that doesn't show a willingness to play off of the ball and make the necessary rotations that he needs to in terms of helping the offense find success as a collective. And I noticed that firsthand last year, seeing this squad against the Orlando Magic. A lot of people asking me, hey, Gabe, what you think about the Milwaukee Bucks? And I'm like, I see Adrian Griffin, who was the head coach at the time, trying to instill defensive principles in a group that was losing some and a cast of guys that weren't buying in. And mainly being the lead dog in charge in Giannis Antetokounmpo. I'm very concerned. Offensively, they don't look the same. And they're struggling to do things that they once used to be great at, such as scoring points in the paint. They're not doing that. Long range shooting, guys like AJ Green have stepped up and provided some, steady minutes, but you're asking a guy off the bench to play a bigger role that doesn't always work sometimes. In the case of the Bucks, it has not. I'm very concerned about the Bucks going forward. I don't know how you get yourself out this situation unless you find a way to take advantage of a schedule that is softening up over the next 7 to 8 games and you win big. Because otherwise, it's going to be time to really ramp up the conversations about this team and whether or not they're going to have a future together or who's going where by the trade deadline.
Oh man, Giannis been trying to set that team on fire the last couple of years, man. Giannis, I'm telling you, man, I feel like Giannis did that first month or two with Dame and just been out on the whole situation since then. They have like no chemistry, no sync between them at all. I won't even say that it's a personal thing. I just feel like you just got two stubborn dudes that just understand that it's not gonna work. It don't matter the coach. It don't matter like any trades you can make on the outside of them. Dame has a perspective on basketball. Giannis has a perspective on basketball. Dame came in willing, and I feel like Giannis still said, "F that." He gonna play Giannis ball, figure it out, and that hasn't led to any success. Giannis got rid of the first coach. And you bringing in Doc Rivers, like I said, Doc doesn't have the greatest reputation with players right now. If you saw Doc Rivers walking into your locker room, would you feel like your team has a better chance at winning? Knowing what you know, like you've played against the teams he's coached. You know what flaws he brings because the flaws travel around with him. Now that's the advantage the Sixers have. Nick Nurse. We've seen him make nothing out of something to something in Toronto. We've seen him deal with Kawhi Leonard the same way he's gonna have to deal with a Joel Embiid situation. Kawhi wasn't there every night in Toronto. He made sure the team was still prepared to play. So right now, yeah, Tyrese Maxey being out, I mean, that's the big domino right there. Now, if he had Maxey still, I definitely wouldn't be worried about Philly. Do I think Philly's a championship team if all guys are healthy? No, because I don't trust Paul George. But and Joel Embiid in the postseason. He's never been great in the postseason. So, I mean, Philly, to me, they don't have a high ceiling, so I'm really not concerned about them. But Giannis, this is a championship player. Giannis wants out, so I expect that Bucks situation to implode by trade deadline, All-Star.
The reason why I had to pose this question, though, Torrance, when you bring up the points you make, is because these were teams that, even though their championship status was in question to me, I did expect to be within the top five of the East and stay there at least all year
No, they
long.
could be in the top
I
five.
did. Yeah,
They could be in
but like
the
to see them getting off to the start that they have, unfortunately, they're playing, like we said, in the Eastern Conference right now that is not as strong as a Western Conference is. And they can have a couple bad weeks and then find themselves within the next week or two within the 4th or 5th seed. Because the thing that's crazy, if I'm not mistaken, I believe like Milwaukee is only like 3 games out of like 5th place or something I was reading.
Yeah.
So if they get on a little hot streak, they could get back in it. But it's just like the start to the year. And some of the principles that I'm seeing on the floor is not what I've become accustomed to watching the Bucks over the last several years.
They're not doing anything that's sustainable long term for the season.
They're not. I
The
agree with you.
games that they won, it was like, okay, yeah, Dame just got off. Then Giannis got off. The games that they were in, like I should say, because they haven't won anything. But it's never, like I said, it's never any sync like we spoke about with Garland and Mitchell or Booker and KD and Bradley Beal. The Bucks are the complete opposite end of that.
Yeah, I agree. And then when you have Brook Lopez that is still there, and don't get me wrong, Brook has given Milwaukee some great years, but he's not the young Brook Lopez
Let
anymore,
me ask you a question.
Yeah,
Let me ask you a question because I feel
sure.
like you're going around something due to political connects. Come on, man. Well, come on, man. Let address the elephant, man. Doc, man.
Well, it's
Doc
funny you bring
only
that
get
up.
the
No.
Doc on
You know, I
Doc
got a
only
ton of
gets a
respect
big
for
dog,
Doc,
my
but
friend.
I've always been one to say when they made that move and fired Adrian Griffin for Doc Rivers, that if that move didn't work, it could be a move that backfired and
You
affected
knew. Hold on.
everything within
Did
the organization.
wait. Did you believe that that move was gonna work?
Honestly, off of what I had
I would
saw,
hope you're not
what
lying.
after what I saw in Philadelphia, no. I really thought that it would have been in Doc's best interest if he wanted a coaching job to sit it out for a couple of years, do TV like he was doing, and then maybe. But I didn't think it was gonna work. And to tell you the truth, I believe that Adrian Griffin got a raw deal. And I said that publicly because that was a bold move.
Well, I mean, hey, man, I told you he was a consultant, man, and you know they laid that check down, man. He from out west, man. You know, moves got to get made. I
Got
but
nothing
look,
but love
my
for
last
Doc.
my
Don't get me
last thing.
wrong, but I get what you're saying. Like, because he does have a habit of blowing leads, not just in the playoffs, but in regular season games.
Or
And you know,
in the locker room too.
oh yeah. Oh yeah,
We lose the
he's
lead
not
in the locker
everybody's
room
cup of
too.
tea, that's for sure. He's not. He's
I
not.
Doc should go
And
coach
I've heard stories of that.
Doc last move should definitely go be the co coach college. Like once they start really inserting these GMs, somebody that can handle the NIL and all the recruiting stuff for them, I think Doc could be a great college coach for like 3 years on the way out. Somebody just give him a big check, bro.
I could see that, but when you've been in the league for as long as he's been,
Can't be
unless
in the
if the
league no
bag
more.
is right, I
Can't be.
can't see him wanting to do that one.
Him and Chris Paul they keep doing the impossible. They keep finding good jobs in the league. This got to be the last one. If
Well,
bro, that putting D-Ham on the staff, like, you know, man to man, I respect the move because I think I understand what that move represent. You know, putting your
for
arm
sure.
around a guy when, you know, perception about him not the greatest.
Mentoring Rondo too.
I don't know. I'm gonna hold out on that one right there. Yeah, I'm gonna hold out on
Well,
that.
I mean, he has. I mean, a lot of people speak highly of him. I mean, he was at the Buck training camp
Oh yeah,
earlier,
man. I just think
in the
time passed
season.
him up.
Yeah,
That's
it
all. I
looks
think
that way.
time passed him up.
It looks that way with Doc. It definitely looks that way, and it's definitely a time to really look in the mirror for all those guys, in my opinion, in Milwaukee, because they got to get right quick. Like I
You
said,
know,
I don't see them winning,
it's
but
inevitable.
yeah, that's true too. It is, but it's just,
It's inevitable.
but you know, Torrance, and you can say the politically correct card, but until a move is made, you know, games
Yeah,
still
I
got to
got.
get played. So, you
Yeah.
know, but moving away from that and entering the final home stretch portion of the show, to chop it up on an event that, no matter how you feel about it as a fan, appears to be one that is here to stay for the foreseeable future. And for those who don't know what I'm talking about, that's the Emirates NBA Cup. Last season, the Los Angeles Lakers took home the league's inaugural in-season tourney title, knocking off the Indiana Pacers in the finals, taking place in Sin City as LeBron James and his teammates managed to go home with $500,000 apiece for winning it all. Now the games to see who will take home this year's NBA Cup are officially underway, as group play games will still take place every Tuesday and Friday night from November 12th all the way to December 3rd. There will still be separate standings until group play is decided, as it was a season ago, as the NBA Cup will conclude in mid-December, with the semifinals and finals going down in Las Vegas for the second year in a row. The groups in the Eastern Conference are as follows. Group A will be the Knicks, Magic, Sixers, Nets, and Hornets. Group B will consist of the Bucks, who we just talked about, Pacers, Heat, Raptors, and Pistons. Group C will feature the Celtics, Cavs, Bulls, Hawks, and Wizards. While the groups in the Western Conference will give us the Wolves, Clippers, Kings, Rockets, and Trailblazers in Group A, the Thunder, Suns, Lakers, Jazz, and Spurs in Group B, alongside of the Denver Nuggets, Dallas Mavericks, New Orleans Pelicans, Golden State Warriors, and Memphis Grizzlies, rounding out Group C. So, Torrance, even though the Indiana Pacers fell short in their quest to win the inaugural NBA Cup a season ago. One could argue that the event did serve as a great stepping stone for the likes of All-Star guard Tyrese Halliburton and his supporting cast to put themselves on the national radar, as the Pacers would manage to garner a playoff berth en route to making it to the Eastern Conference Finals last year. Is there any young team this season that you could see using the NBA Cup as a stage to bring the national spotlight onto them?
Well, yeah, let me get my hate off real quick. Like, for people who say that the NBA Cup didn't mean anything and it don't work, you got to see Tyrese Halliburton. Bro took that run, he turned it into a max contract and an Olympic gold medal.
He did.
And he ain't even that for real, in my personal opinion. Great basketball player, but just ranking NBA players, like, I got guys over him. Now, the team that I anticipated before the season making their mark was the Orlando Magic. I thought this was going to be a great run for Paolo. I really felt like they were going to get to the Final Four of this. Now, if you put me on the spot with this, I mean, this team is still young and they just like had an injury that probably may have derailed their opportunity. But the OKC Thunder, I think this would have been a great thing to go out early in the season and go win something, especially if Chet was healthy. But now I look at this and say, like, Shay, this your time to go make your MVP case.
For me, when I've been thinking about that, because like you said with Tyrese Halliburton, no matter how you feel about him, he definitely parlayed that run last year to a great 2024 for him. In a way that I haven't seen a player do in a long time. I definitely was on the same page as you going into the year. I thought this would be Orlando's coming out party, and I was very eager to see it. And it's a possibility that it still could be with the way that Franz Wagner has been playing lately in the absence of Paolo Banchero. However, if it is one team that I would like to see that is a young team, use the NBA Cup as a stepping stone stage to bring some attention to what they've been doing, it's the Houston Rockets. I'm looking at the way Jalen Green is playing right now, and I believe he's taking what Ime Udoka has put in his ear and ran with it. I like the way that Tari Eason is coming into his own on both sides of the floor. You talk about the vets that are over there, Dylan Brooks, Fred VanVleet. Guys that have been steady presence and showing these guys what it takes to win. And you see them right now starting to take care of business against teams that they should be. And as a result, they're a top five team in the West as of this recording. That's a team, even though they're in a tough group with the likes of the Wolves, the Clippers, and the Kings, if they can hold their own, maybe they could get that wild card spot and be one of those teams that are in like the final eight. And make some noise, get a couple upset wins, and find themselves in Vegas. And before you know it, they might be playing for that prize.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. Just like when it comes down to any young team, it's just a matter of focus and consistency. Because you look at a team like Golden State, right? If Draymond and Steph have it in their mind that they're on a mission this season, then like teams like that become more dangerous because now there you got the vets who know how to win, who know how to slow the game down and play it to their advantage. But like you said, if these young teams, you got a coach like Ime who can like really get in guys' ear. I could see Houston definitely taking advantage of the injuries in the West too. Like you said, we got Ja already out as far as another young team with the Memphis Grizzlies. Or the Lakers, Anthony Davis is already dealing with plantar fasciitis. So, I mean, there's definitely room and opportunity.
Oh, for sure. And then, not to mention the Pelicans, we just received news prior to this recording that Jose Alvarado is going to be out, for the next several weeks. And that's not only including him, but now they're down without Alvarado, DeJounte Murray's out. Zion Williamson's out, and they're already like six games under 500. And even though they get Trey Murphy back, this week, they got a lot of ground to make up,
Now
and I
Pelicans
don't
too.
expect them to go on a big run.
Pelicans cook. But I could see a team that's been kind of turning it around, Denver. I could see Denver definitely taking advantage of this. And they got young guys who could use the experience, Christian Braun, the Julian Strother, Peyton Watson. This is an opportunity to get those guys ready for the postseason because, Mike Malone, it seems like it's tough to earn his trust as far as minutes go in Denver.
Oh yeah. Ever since he's won a championship, Mike Malone ain't been playing no games. He's very strict about who's in his rotations. That's for damn sure. My next question to you, Torrance, though, is like, what are you looking forward to seeing the most in the group play games? And which teams do you believe will emerge out of the group play stage in both the East and West, respectively? I'm not gonna ask you who you think gonna win, because as we know, it could come down to injuries and lock and change. Teams get hot or what have you, or one team just takes the games more serious than the other. You never know.
I think what I'm most looking forward to, I'm really the stars that are healthy. I'm just trying to see which guys are gonna like take these games serious. I want to see from the opening tip, do we feel a change in atmosphere? Like, do these games feel more significant each Tuesday and Friday? The court thing, jersey thing, that's whatever. But I want to actually like feel it, like watching it from the TV, and if I so happen to go to a game this season. I'll just jump ahead, and honestly, I'll tell you that I think that in the finals, the final four will be Boston, I got Boston, Miami. And I have Denver and Golden State.
Okay. I could see those teams being in the mix for sure. I definitely think Boston could be a team that uses this as a stepping stone stage, even though we're familiar with them and they are the defending champions. Last year they had a shot, but I think like toward the end they faded out with a couple losses. And they didn't get a chance because I thought last year we were going to see a Lakers and Celtics NBA Cup. And there's a part of me that wouldn't mind seeing that this year. But like you said, with the recent news surrounding Anthony Davis and everything, I don't know. But as far as like the teams that I see emerging out of group play, I would say in Group A, I would give the upper hand to the Knicks. Although I will not count the Magic out, even though Paolo is out, I won't count them out. I like the way that Anthony Black has developed and starting to come into his own. Like, even though they're not playing up to the level that I thought they would to start the year, they're still within the thick of things. Like, I think they're only a couple games under 500. They've been fairly competitive in games. If they can stay around that range by the time Paolo comes back, I think they'll be fine. Group B, I'm gonna get an upper hand to Miami. Just looking at what I see right now. Indiana's a team that I like them offensively. I like the fact that Benedict Mathurin's starting to come into his own, but I can't buy into what I'm seeing defensively enough to trust them in making yet another run into the NBA Cup final. And then in Group C, that's a two-team race to me. That game on next Tuesday between the Celtics and Cavaliers could actually determine who wins group play. And I think the Celtics will end up taking Group C, but I would not be shocked if the Cavaliers are the first wild card team in the East, which because it has to be 14. So I would say the Knicks, the Heat, the Celtics, and Cavs in the East. And in the West, I'll say in Group A, I take Minnesota. And in Group B, I take the Thunder. I think SGA will be on a mission to prove, that he was snubbed of MVP a season ago. We just saw him light up the Clippers for 45 points the other night. I think he will be ready to go for those games. And as far as Group C, I go with Golden State. And as the wild card, that's the toughest one in the West. The wild card, I'm going to say that's going to come down between the Rockets and the Nuggets, and I'm gonna give the upper hand to the Nuggets right now, but anything can happen. But that's my four teams that represent the East and the West. Once group play is finalized.
So who do you feel like, who do you got winning?
Ooh, I didn't think about that one. But as far as who I think would win, I think Boston should be the favorite. Among the teams in the West, I would say I really think we might get a Celtics and Wolves finals in the NBA Cup. I could definitely see Anthony Edwards taking the NBA Cup a little bit more seriously than
See, I
most
just
stars if he's
I don't
healthy.
know. I just feel like between Steph and KD, I think that old guard still wanna. I it the small things that are still available to them to do that they haven't done yet. I think that might be enough of a motivation. I think I don't know, man. I don't like this team, but I think the Warriors might actually take this.
Oh, I'm not counting them out of it.
No, I think the war. Yeah, I think the Warriors might actually. I think we might get Celtics Warriors in the cup in the final.
That would be a great final to have.
Yeah, I think I might have to take. I think we. Sh I'm gonna take the Warriors. On paper and ideally, I feel like the Celtics should be out to dominate everything. NBA Cup, number one seed, get back to the
I agree.
finals. But right now, I don't know. I guess you know JB just coming back from an injury, and we still waiting on Porzingis. So. You know, guys haven't all the way gotten there, but yeah, on paper, they should be trying to like really take these games serious. That's what I'm looking forward to, like I said earlier. Which teams, which superstars are really showing that this matters? Because, you know, people talk shit about Bron, but I don't know, man. That kind of did help legitimize it that from game one, he definitely made this like be something to him and to his team. So hopefully we see other guys. Continue the tradition and try to create a tradition, I should say.
Oh, it's definitely important to create a tradition for this event. And I think year one, with the way that LeBron showed up and showed out in Vegas, it let me know that it could be here to stay. And hopefully the other players fall in line, because you could tell it meant something to him. I can't tell you the last time I seen LeBron playing like that in December,
You know what I
outside
just.
of a Christmas Day game.
You know what I just thought about though?
What's up?
Why wouldn't they just do it like Super Bowl weekend?
You know that I never thought of it like that. I mean, to me, I don't mind it being formatted the way that it is, just from the standpoint of it's right around Christmas time. And you know that's when everybody's starting to really watch the NBA. 'Cause I've always had a saying that, in my opinion, the NBA don't really start till December. It
Every,
don't heat up until then.
I think most people who follow the league would pretty much say that Christmas is the regular season start for real.
Yeah, that's when I start, following it more. But like December is when I start seeing players pick up their performance too. And I think that's why you may see that NBA Cup within that point. And then, like we only what, 4 weeks into the season. So and this is a time where prior to the NBA Cup, a lot of people would just be watching games and it didn't seem like everybody was incentivized to, play to the
Keep up.
highest level, so to speak.
But see, I feel like that still kind of remains to a certain extent. I think that it's gonna be
It
a lot of
does.
people that are gonna look up and realize towards the end of group play, like, oh, okay, this NBA Cup thing is getting close. I said the Super Bowl because one of the things that they clearly wanted in Vegas is they wanted it to have a big game feel.
Yeah.
And last year, I don't know, you know, it felt kind of manufactured because, you know, I know Chris Rock, I mean, Chris Tucker going to be there. You know what I'm saying? You know, the typical NBA celebrities. I just figure, like, if you do a Super Bowl weekend, I mean, you kind of incentivize guys like, hey, man, we Super Bowl tickets for the game Sunday for all the, like, the last four teams or whatever. And then you got that Friday and Saturday, like, of Super Bowl weekend where you guys are the event in town. and all the celebrities and people that you would want at the game, it becomes a hot ticket for that weekend.
I never thought about it like that.
And
And it's funny. It's funny if they did have it like that last year with the Super Bowl being in Vegas. That could have been pretty cool. I'm not gonna lie.
I just look at it like, okay, one day there's going to be a team in Vegas. So it's like you wouldn't want to just keep giving a particular team a potential home court advantage in that regard. You want to change the location. Super Bowl, they pretty much do a good job of being somewhere that most people would want to take a weekend, a week away to. And I mean, like you said, guys don't really round in the form until Christmas. People are kind of down about the All-Star game and All-Star weekend itself.
We're gonna have some conversations about that once that,
Yeah, that time
time
comes.
comes. Yeah,
Yeah,
that's
so
definitely something we're gonna have a combo
but I
about.
mean,
I
but
don't miss this one for a while.
on paper though, I do like the NBA Cup. I like the trophy. I like that guys get a cash incentive, especially when you start talking about role players, two-way players, guys at the end of the bench. It'd be cool to see them guys get that money in cash or just have like a big, like, I don't know, big briefcase of money, something theatrical before the game. Kind of like what was it, the Jay-Z Fat Joe Rucker Park game when they both were talking about sitting the money down in the middle of the court before the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, because sometimes you just need a picture or an image just to get people hype. Like, you know what I'm saying? If you told me, man, Steph and Bron playing for $1 million in Vegas, you know what I'm saying, Super Bowl weekend, why wouldn't people tune in? So the whole goal is to draw intrigue to the league and also create make this a legacy award at some point. So I think you kill two birds one stone moving this game to February, because you and then at the same time, last thing, we know that the prime time NBA games start after the Super Bowl. The Sunday games, which will probably be on NBC starting next year, possibly. So, I mean, I just feel like this would be the perfect lead into all of that. Let the regular season be slow like it is until Christmas comes. The Christmas games keep their value. And, right before the trade deadline, Super Bowl weekend, we get the Final Four of the NBA Cup.
Now, one thing I will say that I have mixed feelings about is that I saw that the championship game for the NBA Cup will be hosted December the 17th, which is on a Wednesday.
No, I think it's
Last time
Sunday.
last year they had the NBA Cup final on a Saturday night, and it was the only game on the night between the Pacers and Lakers. And I actually like that. Because it focused or it forced fans to put their focus on Las Vegas in that inaugural cup. And I wouldn't mind if that game was hosted on Saturday night specifically for that reason. And I think it would be even cooler if it, as long as they're hosted it in Vegas, then maybe they would have a fight, intertwined with that. Because if you had that, yeah, it's even better. It's just me being a boxing fan, I wouldn't
Yeah,
mind that.
but that's why I said though you can't keep doing the Vegas thing for too long if you're gonna have a team there. So that's why I
That's
said it.
true. No,
And
I don't think they're gonna be there forever.
I mean, I feel like I know we spoke about it before that we're gonna have one of these game years. That shit gonna be in like Dubai or Abu Dhabi. So, because that's who's putting the money up for the cup and the tournament itself. So
True.
at some point they're gonna want to get to see it live and in person. But I don't know. I think it'll be cool for it to be Super Bowl weekend though, man. Because why not have a little performance before that game? Because it's the it. See, I just think that the finals is a 7-game series. That's traditional basketball. But this tournament, you're trying to introduce something different to it. Okay, you get the group play phase, and then you get the final eight single elimination phase. So why not do all you can to make this game feel as big as possible? And plus the NFL, they're starting to put on Christmas games too. So yeah, I mean
Black
the so
Friday.
so the Christmas Day games won't be as valuable for the NBA as they once were, like when we were coming up. NFL still is king.
No doubt about it. And it's definitely cool, you know, that we're discussing these ideas, because that's something that you don't really hear too many people talking about when it comes to this relatively new event. And an event that, like I said, when introducing it and us talking about it, we know it's going to be here to stay, especially in Adam Silver's league, where, you know, he's trying to implement new ideas, new concepts in a way that distinguishes his tenure as commissioner from David Stern. So with this being his baby, if you will, he needs to figure out ways to make it stand out in order to not only just appeal to the hardcore fans, but even the most casual fan that flocks to watch the NBA from time to time. But I want to get into these games that we got on the docket week four of the regular season in the NBA. You got LeBron James and the Los Angeles Lakers set to take off against, you know, Victor Wembanyama in San Antonio, 6:30 on Friday night at ESPN. You also got the Grizzlies going into LA to face the Lakers on Wednesday on ESPN as part of the late night game. The Lakers and Spurs match up on Friday. That's going to be a big game in Group B. Is there any game specifically or a series of games over the course of this week that you're looking forward to watching? And if so, why?
I will definitely start. Most importantly to me this week, I will go Friday night. Friday night, you got a 7 p.m. game between the Phoenix Suns and OKC, and then 9 o'clock, you got Memphis Golden State. So we got two in-season tournament games. Man, I would just wish it wasn't the injuries, because I was definitely looking forward to KD returning to OKC, especially after you got Gilbert Arenas saying that this current iteration of the Thunder is better than the 2012 finals team
Yeah, I
that
saw
KD was
that.
on, that, you know, three eventual MVP. Anytime we get Ja Morant against Steph Curry, I'm locked in. And these, what, two teams, they kind of have like a rivalry to a certain extent. With, yeah, OKC, I mean, Golden State knocking Memphis out the postseason 1 year. Then we had Memphis knocking Golden State out of the play-in, one of the first years of the play-in. But once again, we got Ja Morant out. So, man, still in all, those are two of the games I'm looking forward to. If we're just talking about just actual great basketball, like healthy teams, got Minnesota and Sacramento the same night as well. So Friday night, I believe, if you're a basketball fan, should be a good night.
Funny you pick a couple games on Friday night. The game that I was looking forward to watching before the injuries to KD and Chet was Phoenix and Oklahoma City. And that's a game that I'm gonna definitely make sure that I tune into as much as I can. But after those injuries, I started looking around the schedule a little bit, and I noticed you got the Clippers going up against the Rockets at 7 p.m. on Friday night in Houston. That's a game that'll be an NBA Cup game. That's Group A play. That's the game I want to see, and I'm going to tell you why. Alperen Sengun right now is averaging 20 and 10, shooting over 50% from the floor in the month of November. Him and Nikola Jokic are the only players in the league that can say that. He's starting to come into his own after getting his contract extension. And even though, you know, he's had some moments where he's not being played in crunch time, he's a guy that you can consider as a big focal point within Houston's offense when he's clicking. And right now, he's playing some spectacular basketball. I just talked about Tari Eason earlier and Jalen Green. Those young guys are starting to come into their own in Houston. Well, now you got a former guy that was once the face of the franchise stepping into the Toyota Center as a visitor. And even though this isn't his first rodeo as a visitor, you know, James Harden has been putting together some solid basketball. Yeah, he's not shooting at the level that he once has, but he's still averaging 20 and 10, still being that de facto point guard in a score when he needs to be, alongside of Norm Powell, a guy that I've always liked as far as his game and appreciated his ability coming off the bench, putting up 17 a night. Now you see him starting to take his game to another notch, what they needed him to do in the absence of Kawhi Leonard, averaging over 20 a game. You know, being that two-way player and that vet that they need, and contributing at a high level consistently. And you add that on top of the defense that they've been able to play. Jeff Van Gundy has done a hell of a job over there as an assistant coach under Tyronn Lewis. Great to see him back in the game with that energy, knowing the relationship that he had with Harden dating back to their time living in Houston and teaming up, trying to, make things right in LA. I'm very curious to see which team takes this game, by the horns and gets off to a hot start, because I think whoever wins this game may have an upper hand in Group A, even though Minnesota is going up against the Kings in Group A as well. That's going to be another good game to watch. But like that group right there is going to be the best group to me in the West.
And I don't know, I just piggybacking off of the Rockets Clippers game, I think it'd be cool to see Jalen Green and Sengun and them guys take the same mentality that Cleveland did about the Lakers coming in the to the Q. Well, I know it's like Rocket Mortgage
Yeah,
now, but
Rocket
it's not
Man,
the Q.
it's still the Q at heart.
Yeah,
Yeah, I
it's
still refer
still,
to it as the Q.
but see, that was the thing. Hey, but that was the thing, man. Hey, them guys came out and you could see it in they play, man. Mitchell, he came out to make a statement, man. Like, this ain't your house no more. I mean, this will always be your house, but you a visitor tonight. And I
Right.
think that'd be cool to see Jalen Green kind of like bring that type of energy to James Harden. Like, yeah, man, like, this my show here now. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, for sure. And we know personally, and I of course I know, having formerly covered the Rockets, the Rockets and the Clippers have had a shared history with one another, might I
Yeah.
say. Date back to the tunnel incident, the Chris
The
Paul
comeback.
trade, and a comeback, guys like Pat Bev, Montrezl Harrell, James, now they've all, played for both franchises. Russell Westbrook and stuff. So they have a little mutual history with one another. So I would be very eager to see how both teams treat the game. And like you said, if you're the Rockets, you want to send a message. And what better way to send a message to a guy that was once the face of the franchise and who we all know number will be retired high above the Toyota Center once it's all said and done, as they've never issued the number 13 out to a player since he's left.
Yeah, man, definitely looking forward to that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that concludes, the first ever episode of the New 24 podcast. Definitely want to show love and appreciation to all of those that took the time to listen to our podcast this week. Definitely gonna make sure that we back and better than ever in future weeks that lie ahead. If you want to follow us, you can on social media. You follow me on Twitter at What Gabe Said. You can follow my man Torrance at TStacks underscore on Twitter. We always gonna be on there talking about a variety of things, not just within basketball, but just culture and life in general. Whatever suits you and applies to you. But definitely, want to show love and appreciation to all those for listening. For myself, Gabriel Wilkins, my co-host Torrance Stagger. So long, everybody.